Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 186 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Al, I'm joined by my good friend Anton.
Hello Alistair, and I'm joined by my good friend... Oh wait, he's not quite here. Have you seen him?
No. Mike's not here, but it's really cool. I've got to tell you what Mike is doing, right? I got a message from him last night saying he was on an airplane off to Sokovia. He's being made an honorary citizen. How cool is that? This is because you said we're part of the MCU. He's being made an honorary citizen of Sokovia. Wow, how awesome is that?
Yeah, apparently there's going to be a bunch of celebrities. They're going to have, a highlight party. It's going to be very exciting over there.
I can't wait to see what his passport looks like. I mean, that's amazing. I don't know if he's going to get dual British and Sokovian passports or how that's going to work. I'm so jealous. I want a Sokovian passport.
Indeed, it's truly an honour, only worthy of the gods. I'm sure he's going to have a lovely time.
Absolutely. I imagine if he's not back with us next week, he'll probably be made an honorary citizen of Wakanda. Probably, but I don't know. I don't know if that's the way it works. You become citizen one, become citizen the other. No idea. Not a clue. Anyway, he's not with us. That's the important takeaway. It's just me and Anton. So the important question, Anton, is what have you been playing this week?
Oh, once again, I've been a traitor of switchings, and I've been playing more of American Truck Simulator because I have no self-respect. I now have a lorry with tons of upgrades, and I think this was a week when... that was last week. I bought all the DLC because it was on sale, and have bankrupted myself, coincidentally, because they're selling each of the states individually. That has been my life. It's been great. Joyous. I would say it would be great on Nintendo Switch. I usually say that when I'm playing things off-platform. But in this instance, it would absolutely not work. And I've lied. One other game I've played this week, I really want to come to Nintendo Switch. I've been playing more Play Up. That is the roguelike, Overcooked-esque title. It is so perfect. I'm absolutely shocked it wasn't included in the Indie World Direct because it's going to be so perfect when it comes to Nintendo Switch, and you and Mike need to play it as soon as it does come out.
I will take that recommendation. I will force Mike to play it. There's nothing I like more than forcing Mike to play video games. It gives me a sort of sense of power. I mean, make of that what you will. So if you're so into American Truck Simulator, does this mean for our next like mug club thing, we need to go get like trucker baseball caps with the NSUKP logo on them just so you can wear it and get a bit stained and grotty and kind of disgusting?
I think that might have to be an Anton exclusive. I wouldn't subject our audience to that. However, if you do want to learn about all of the Patreon goodies, such as the aforementioned mug club that doesn't exclusively include mugs, go to nsukp.co.uk/support-us. Learn about all the bonus shows we do and many other little bits and rewards that we do. It's quite a nice collection of work we put together there, Al.
It is, although we named that badly. We should not have called it Mug Club. We should have called it Merch Club or something like that. I mean, Mug Club does seem a bit misleading. To be fair, I think everything we've done bar the beanie has been a mug so far, right?
Yep, right? Only one non-mug in the Mug Club, which is a pretty good track record, if you ask me.
In fact, I actually think the next set of mugs are going to be delivered to me this week, which means that we're going out to our patrons at some point, I hope, this week. So that'll be exciting. I can't wait for them to go out. I do love it when mugs start landing people's doorsteps and the Discord gets lit up with people posting pictures and little videos. I remember when one of the mugs landed, I think it was our first mug, somebody did like a Lion King, in the beginning of Lion King when they're holding up Simba on the rocks, jalapenos, and that, all that stuff. Someone did that, but with our mug poking through the stair, and it was amazing and it made me laugh so much. I think it was Scotty. Off the top of my head. That was really, really good. Well, I can say I have played Switch. I've actually played quite a bit, but only one game.
Oh, do tell.
My other half and I, actually, to begin with, Son and I were playing, Super Mario Party. So not the new one, the last one. Played Super Mario Party, and now other half and I have been playing Super Mario Party, and we have finally unlocked Challenge Road. We're nearly the end of Challenge Road, which means we nearly get these extra bonus characters, which I'm very excited about, because I've had this game for about 2 years, maybe 3 years, and I couldn't figure out how to unlock all these extra characters until I went on the Googles, and Googles told me how to do it, and I'm so happy about this. So yeah, we're working our way through doing every single challenge individually on Challenge Road now. We've unlocked them all, and I've already got, I think, the little Dry Bones character. He's been unlocked, and I've got three more to go, which I think are the Donkey Kong, maybe, and Diddy Kong and someone else. I don't know who. There's more characters in there. I'm very much looking forward to being able to play with them because it's such a good game.
I'm very jealous. It's been a while since I've played a good Mario Party, so very craving, and especially just having a look at how many of them we've got on Nintendo Switch. We've got obviously the N64 ones plus the actual official two on the console. It's a good console for having a party.
It is a really good console for having a party, and I think we should probably jump into the news and see if there's any more good party games coming our way. Spoiler, I don't think there are in this one, but and actually we have a bit of a confession to make, because this week there's really not much news. Just don't tell anyone. It's really, really short. Our notes are like half the length they normally are, so we're going to be doing a lot of padding. You might, if you're really, really smart, notice we're not doing a turbo mode this week, and that's because if we did turbo mode, well, the show would be about 20 minutes long. So just stick with us. It's going to be good. Just no turbo mode. Got it? Yeah? Fine. We're all in agreement. No turbo mode. Okay, here we go. The news.
Tell us. The people want to know.
First up, Crunchyroll. That is the Crunchyroll, the streamer. Crunchyroll have announced Haimi's Quest for a Nintendo Game Boy Color, which is a self-published game. It's an action-adventure game, apparently, although we've not really seen much about it, about saving the world from the Y2K bug, coming out May next year. Awesome. This is just so awesome, Anton.
I do love it when we get games on this podcast that sound like they're Onion articles. This doesn't even seem real. Crunchyroll, one, making a video game, and then two, it's for the Game Boy Color. I'm excited to see it. I feel like, you know, it's, why would you do it and just do it poorly? If you're going to go to all of this effort of one making a video game for the Game Boy Color of all things, doing it exclusively physically, so it's not even like a ROM hack they're putting out there. You know, I feel like they must clearly believe in either the people they put to make this together or the game they've made. I'm excited to see it. I think the idea of, you know, wanting to prevent Y2K because Crunchyroll exists on the internet, which exists post Y2K, is so dumb that I love it, Al.
It's incredibly meta. And what I quite like about this is the fact that they've teamed up with Limited Run Games. So a bit like the original Pokemon games, where they came in different colored cartridges, this one comes in two different flavors too. You can order it from Limited Run Games and you'll get a blue cartridge, but if you order it from Crunchyroll's website or their online store, you get an orange cartridge. It's got two flavors. I love it.
All the more ways to spend your money. And yep, you know, I absolutely love this. If you're wanting to learn more about Nintendo Game Boy Color stuff, we recently did a prequel for it on the Patreon, so do check that out if you're interested.
Speaking of, though, you said spend your hard-earned pennies on it. Do you know how much this game costs for your Game Boy Color? Have you seen that?
I have not seen this. Do enlighten me.
Do you want to take a stab? What do you think would be the right price for this?
I think just because cartridges are so hard to fabricate, it would be the full like £50, sadly.
Well, you're not a million miles off. It's £38. Mm. I was thinking that I was on the steep side for a game for an old console, but your estimate being a lot higher makes me think I'm being a fool. A fool.
Yeah, it's mainly I've seen a lot of kind of fan-made games, kind of made after the consoles have existed, and they're always very, very expensive. You know, looking at NES stuff that have been done after the fact, homebrews, that's the word. And yeah, they're always very expensive. You can get stuff for like the CD-based consoles are quite affordable. Those are kind of usually £20, I find, when there's homebrew kind of physicals. But for cartridges, it's just, they don't make the technology in large scales anymore.
Well, that's very true. Well, if you are interested in getting your hands on this top-down Zelda-esque adventure, which is basically what it is, you'll basically need to go get your pre-order in pretty sharpish, because pre-orders end on the 23rd of December, and after that, well, they're going to ship in May. So, you know, got a bit of a wait, but if you want one, get your skates on, go grab one right now. Let's move ourselves on to our next news story. Outright Games and Patoons Studio have announced... Wait for it. Are you ready? Well, actually, this requires a drum roll. Peppa Pig World Adventure. Oh yes, it's coming to the Nintendo Switch next year. Anton, how psyched are you for this?
You know, it sounds dumb. I'm actually quite psyched about this. I've known people to play this because it's a very good 100% on Xbox, and it's in part of Game Pass, and it's really easy, the last game. And that last game was sillily high quality for a Peppa Pig game. It has no right to be actually well put together. So this new one, expanding the scope, expanding the ambition for a Peppa Pig game, is truly going to be a Game of the Year contender, and only we'll have to judge it once it comes out. But in all honesty, the only thing that was really wrong with the last game, it was very, very short. It was like an hour and a half game, which maybe if you're not like an adult, it might take longer, theoretically. But, you know, getting a beefier Peppa Pig experience or a piggier Peppa Pig experience could be good.
I mean, to be fair, the age range that this game is going to be targeting, you don't want it much past an hour and a half. Their attention span is like 5 minutes. They'll be playing this in 5 minute chunks. They won't get to the end of the game. It doesn't matter. They just want to turn it on and go, Peppa Pig! I mean, that's all it needs to do. And I'm kind of pleasantly surprised that this one did so well on other consoles in the past. You know, it's what's called My Friend Peppa Pig was the last one. This one I don't really have much expectation for. I mean, we've not really described what this is. I presume that this is a bloodthirsty first-person shooter, right?
Somewhere, you know, in between. And, you know, it's the big, exciting. This is the Fast and Furious 7 of the Peppa Pig video games, where it goes globetrotting around the world. James Bond Spectre, you know, it's expanding the scope. It's going to all these different places with the world adventure.
Ooh, so if that's right up your street, well, you don't have to wait that long. Next year it's coming out at some point. I don't actually think they've given us a particular date. They've just said, literally, the article I'm reading says at some point in 2023. That is awesome. All right, let's talk about Laugh-A-Bird, who've announced Warside for the Nintendo Switch. This looks really familiar, Anton. Why does it look so familiar to me?
Well, basically, they went ahead and got tired of waiting for Advance Wars, as I think we're all feeling right now. That game's been in development hell and it's been finished and got leaked like via Nintendo themselves on the eShop over like a year ago now. So I think they've given up and just made their own Advance Wars, and it's very faithful. It's very much the Game Boy Advance turn-based adventure, but, you know, expanded to a new scope, a new scale, and yeah, just redone for the modern day. And, you know, with a release day of autumn 2023, they might actually be able to beat Advance War to launch, because who knows when we're getting that one.
It is just hilarious. It does look, as you say, incredibly faithful. This looks like a proper homage to the original ones, and I think they're doing it as a Kickstarter. So the Kickstarter, I don't think, has launched just yet, but it's about to launch in the very, very near future, and I can see this one doing very, very well. I suspect that there will be a large number of people out there who have got slightly fed up waiting for Advance Wars to be able to purchase it legally if they didn't obtain a legal copy when it was accidentally, you know, released when it shouldn't be. So yeah, I think this will do well. I think there's a lot of people who go out and go, you know what, I'm going to buy this. This looks good.
Very exciting. And I think the thing that's nice is they have acknowledged that there are, you know, it's very much in the style of Advance Wars. They're not pretending like it's not. And yeah, just bring it up modern. I think what's quite nice about this one compared to the Advance War 1 and 2s that has been lost to development hell is it is expanding the scope a little. You know, it's designed for a modern console. You know, it has levels that are, you know, bigger, that can exist on bigger screens, unlike the Advance Wars 1 and 2, which is, you know, designed to fit on a tiny Game Boy Advance screen.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Absolutely. So if you're intrigued, this one comes with a story mode, which has got 30 missions in it. You've got 20 different types of tanks, bombers, aircraft, a whole lot of stuff. You've got 12 unit commanders, plenty of battles. There's a mission editor in there. There's multiplayer battles, either local or via internet. So there's a whole load of content being squeezed into this game, and I think it's probably worth checking out if you are vaguely interested in Advanced Wars and you've got fed up waiting for it. Okay, Moving on to a little bit of legal controversy. So, Anton, tell me about Cooking Mama and the IP issue that's been going on.
Well, if you were listening to the podcast back in season two, which is crazily 2 years ago now, you may recall us talking about a scandal in which kind of Office Crates, the IP holder for Cooking Mama, had commissioned Planet Entertainment to make the new game. Now, as part of a publisher and kind of IP relationship there, you know, they had to check in and basically make sure it's up to the IP holder's standards before releasing. Office Crate basically like, you know, we want more work on it. It's not ready yet. And Planet Entertainment were basically like, nah, we're done. And then released it anyway without the consent of the IP holder. The result of this is it got shipped out to retail and then basically pulled from the online stores, and then kind of production stopped on it, and there are these elusive copies that were left out in the wild. And now we're finally seeing the retribution here, as Office Crates is suing Planet Entertainment for basically releasing a Cooking Mama game without their consent.
Yeah, and it's been very, very interesting. As you said, it went off to arbitration, everything went in their favour, and they're now suing them. Not only did they release it on the Switch without any consent, they also released it on the PlayStation 4 when that wasn't even part of their legal agreement. They had no license at all to ever release it on a PlayStation 4, but they went ahead and did that too. So yeah, they're understandably a little bit cheesed off with Planet, whatever they called, Entertainment. I can understand why Office Crate are suing them. They seem to be very polite about it. All the press releases that have come out have been very politely written, but they're understandably cheesed off. It's just, it's such a weird story. I don't understand why Planet Entertainment went ahead and released this game when they knew that they didn't have the rights to do so.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to lose all their revenue from this. They're going to literally make not a penny.
Yeah, the only way I could see them, the reason that they did this was that they were on the verge of financial destruction and they just needed money. And that just doesn't bode well for how they're going to handle this. You know, quite often when we get these lawsuits, it is, you know, maybe just an element of, oh, negligence, or, you know, they just looked at it through a different optics. I'm thinking particularly back to Donkey Kong and the Coleco, and then Coleco unveiled a games console, and then that conflated with a contract they had with another company to only make games on their games console. Whole drama from the 80s, but that was just different optics. This here is just pure, you know, we're doing it anyway. And I can only see this ending very, very poorly for Planet Entertainment.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, they're not the only game that's been buggy and not up to quality that we've been talking about this week, because you may have noticed on the internet and on the social medias, there's been a little bit of controversy about the latest Pokemon that has been released. So that is, in case you're hiding under a rock, Scarlet and Violet. It came out this week and, well, yeah, there's a few bugs and it's not been particularly well received, Anton.
Indeed. So by professional reviewers, it has been sitting at about an 8 on Metacritic, and for audience reviews, it's sitting at 2.9. And this is fairly unanimous, where people are just not happy with, one, the quality of graphics, and two, the bugginess of it. It is falling apart, held together with matchsticks. And, you know, it's been quite interesting, where I feel like Pokemon has been on this slope for a little bit now. When Sword and Shield came out, people were a little bit critical of how the open zone was kind of presented, but, you know, it was a small part in a larger game. And then with Legends Arceus, everybody I knew that played it was like, yeah, it's not on Breath of the Wild quality, but, you know, the gameplay's still good underneath it. But they seemingly dropped down too low in terms of, one, the visual aesthetic and quality of it that way, and then combining that with the bugs there. And I think this especially looks bad on the Pokemon company, that Legends Arceus was literally this year, and then we had two Pokemons last year, and we've had a lot of Pokemon, so the fact this one's came out so soon after the other ones in a state that is incredibly disappointing is a real shame. And, you know, I think there's a lot of defenders of this title, you know, blaming the Nintendo Switch for the quality here, but, you know, Breath of the Wild, a launch title, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and 3, Dragon Quest. We've had a lot of really good-looking open-world games that have ran very, very well and have been a far more action-packed that need, you know, a lot more intense explosions and all these effects. It's very disappointing to see what they've delivered here.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just laziness. The level of bugginess is insane. There's characters doing weird and wonderful things that look like they've come straight out of The Exorcist. Heads and bodies and arms twisting around and flailing. And I was looking at Nintendo Life. They had a bit when they managed to find their own bug where you put a character up against the wall and took a selfie. If you back them up too much, all the bits of their face, their eyeballs and mouth and everything popped out of their head. I mean, it was just... it's so badly done. And the aesthetic is really not great. I saw someone on Twitter that was saying that it looked like a PS3 launch game from 2006. And actually, you know what? That's not a million miles off. They're not good. And to blame the Switch hardware is, well, as you say, A, a load of nonsense because we've got so many really, really good games on there. And B, this game was designed for this hardware. They knew what they were operating with. There is no good reason to blame the hardware. You just didn't design your game properly to run on it. I mean, it's shocking. And we've had quite a few games now on the Switch, and Pokemon is going through a bit of a celebratory era still. We're getting loads and loads of Pokemon left, right, and centre. They're still in this big anniversary kind of thing. We obviously had Ash finally becoming a champion last week. You sort of feel that they've just kind of half-assed this one, really, and they've just pushed out when they really shouldn't have done. They should take their time. We'd say this time and time again. Take your time. Delay a game. Do it more slowly. Just look at Sonic Frontiers. Okay, that came out in early preview. The internet saw it via IGN and they hated it. Absolutely hated it. Now, okay, that was partly down to the reviewer, but it gave them the time, and I think they delayed Frontiers, didn't they, to make it better. In fact, I feel they delayed it twice. Am I right?
No, actually didn't delay that one. It was
Had. Did they not give us another month on it?
They mainly didn't show off the release date for a while, so may have been delayed behind the scenes, but they only gave us one release date for that one there.
Okay. Well, yeah. So either way, this has happened with many other games, so ignore what I just said. But many, many other games. They delay them to make them better, and when they come out, they're good. They should just have done that with this one, particularly with Pokemon being such an important IP. It is such an important franchise. They can't really afford to be putting out rubbish games. I mean, I know a whole lot of people will go and buy it. They have gone and bought it. But all you're doing is losing goodwill. It's just a bad move.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is they absolutely could have afforded to delay this. You know, I can sympathise a little bit with, you know, big titles like Cyberpunk getting put out in a poor state as, you know, a team that is publishing it themselves, and, you know, they've been working on it for 8 years. Maybe they can't afford to delay it anymore. But Legends Arceus just came out this year. We had Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl a year ago, and then we had the DLCs for Sword and Shield. We had Sword and Shields. We had Let's Go, Pikachu and Eevee, and that's just the main line. Never mind all the other Pokemon spin-offs, never mind all the other avenues of finance the Pokemon company has. And it's not their first frontier with the kind of Nintendo Switch. They've made a lot of other games on this platform. It should be these, at this point, we should be getting some of the most refined and polished games off the platform, as we have seen with titles like Xenoblade 3 and Splatoon 3.
Yeah, it's just laziness. It's laziness and it's greed, and I can't really find a good way to defend them, and I now sort of don't feel the need to defend them. I'm actually quite happy putting the boot into them. They kind of deserve it. That's not the only reason that this game's been in the news this week, though. Because there's been a bit of controversy around a Pokemon virus, which sounds like a bad thing, but it's not. In every other version since Gen 2 of Pokemon, there's been a Pokemon virus called Pokerus, which if your Pokemon contract it, they get double the, I think it's experience points or something like that, when you battle. It's gone. It's been stripped out. People have even looked at the source code of the game and gone, yeah, it's entirely been removed, and people ain't happy about it, Anton.
Yeah, it's quite an odd move where, as we mentioned on episode 185 of the podcast, there were leaks of this game before launch. And it seems like in those earlier releases of the game, the Pokerus was in there. So it's, I guess maybe them just doing a bit of a house cleaning as they get closer to launch, removing features that weren't implemented into the game. But, you know, they're working on a lot. You know, they might be saving it for next year's Pokemon in, you know, March.
Who knows? It was effort values that you got double of. I have no idea what effort value is because I've not played any of the new Pokemon. I've only ever played Gen 1 games. Maybe I should go and try some of the new ones. I don't know. Let's move on to talk about something a little bit different. Let's go back to legally things because, you know me, I like my businessy, legally dull stuff. And let's specifically talk about Epic and their lawsuit that they were having against, I'm going to say it was Apple, I think, was the big one they're trying to sue. But in that, we've got some new news, Anton, to do with the Google Play Store and the Nintendo Store, part of the Project Hug. Please enlighten me.
Indeed. So these lawsuits that have been going on are kind of two lawsuits going after the same problem, both getting conducted by Epic. One's going after Apple and one's going after Google, but they're kind of two sides of the same coin. Basically, the issue is here is the idea of having closed app stores on general computing platforms. Within all of that Google lawsuit, it has came out that Google had a project called Project Hug. Now, on Android phones, you can have, you know, Google Play and you can only download apps from the Google Play Store. But you can also tick a box that's like, I don't mind downloading stuff from the internet, which is less secure, but you can download stuff from the internet and, you know, run third-party applications that are not verified by Google. And the fear Google had is people would use this method, as you can currently do for getting Fortnite, not from the Google Play Store, to download third-party app source, diverting kind of Google's 33% cut that they make from all microtransactions on apps that are part of the Google Play Store. So the fear was other people would make their own app stores and Google would just start making money from apps in any way. And there was many people that saw this as a good avenue, that thought they were in a good position to make their own app store. And many people were kind of mentioned as part of this kind of Project Hug. But one of the names mentioned was Nintendo. And yeah, it seemed like at some point, Nintendo, when making their own apps, was thinking, we don't want to take a 33% cut. We want to have our own app source, or apps are kind of to the side of everything else, and had considered making their own app store for Android. And Google, through some form of either financial compensation, as they did with Activision Blizzard, or kind of ad compensation, giving cheap or discounted advertising on platforms like YouTube, persuaded Nintendo to not go down the route of making their own app store for Androids. There's a couple things to unpack about this, but how do you feel about the idea if Nintendo had went ahead and made their own app store for the App Store, or App Store for Android app? I'll get myself tongue-tied.
That could have been interesting, because we've got a couple of iOS, in fact, we've got quite a lot of iOS games now out there from Nintendo. I feel that they don't have quite such a presence on Google Play, but I'm maybe talking about bottom, because I've not gone and Googled this, I've not checked it. Do we know, are all games that you can get on iOS available on Android? Things like Mario Kart Tour and Animal
Crossing.
Yeah.
Yes, it's one-to-one, so it's got the same library of games that you would expect on the Apple ecosystem.
It does, but they're just being funneled through Google. I can see why Google wouldn't want Nintendo to do that. I can also see why Nintendo would want to make their own app store, and it must have been some substantial incentive that Google gave them to, well, not go ahead and do it, because it would give Nintendo a lot more control, and it would give Nintendo, presumably, a lot more revenue.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be more revenue for Nintendo. Their stuff would be kind of safeguarded from the Play Store, so, you know, people can drop reviews on any of it. You know, Nintendo can present all of their games under one shared banner, so, you know, it's all very clear and concisive. No Nintendo games falling to the bottom of that pile. You know, if you downloaded the Nintendo App Store for one game, let's say you wanted it just for Mario Kart Tour, you know, other games that might have fallen to the bottom of that pile, like Dragalo Lost when that was still active, would be up there prime, getting prime marketing up there with the best of Nintendo.
Yeah, it really must have been some incentive, because that's such a lucrative opportunity. Plus, Nintendo would then have been able to link every download to a person, because they would have made you sign in with some sort of Nintendo account, presumably, or at least get all your details from Google or whoever, whatever sign-in method they use. That would have given Nintendo a whole load of data as well. And they also wouldn't have been subject to any of the rules of the Google Play Store. They could have made their own rules. I mean, it's just such an amazing opportunity for Nintendo. I can see why they would have wanted to do it. Very, very intriguing. They would never, of course, have had the opportunity to do that on iOS, because Apple's even more controlling than Google is. But I am massively intrigued. I'd love to know the details of that particular agreement.
Indeed, and that is just to consider the possibility that Nintendo were only wanting to do their own apps. They could have taken the route that Amazon has with their Android app store and, you know, maybe you've been an arbiter for other parties. You know, what if it was a case that, you know, you bought a game on Nintendo Switch, you got the mobile version too? You know, there's tons of room for scope there. I think starting on the closed scale with Nintendo-only games, kind of an expanded scale with the, you know, let's say Pokemon Unite as a cross-platform title, being able to link those more organically, and then maybe third-party games that have both Android and iOS Nintendo Switch versions, you know, let's say Stardew Valley or Minecraft.
Do you think if they'd had a store like that on Android, you'd have got a lot more Game Boy games released as well now? Because Game Boy emulation on a phone would presumably be not that difficult to do, and you've already got the right form factor. It's the right size for a lot of their traditional original Game Boy games. That could have been such a lucrative opportunity, and a lot of those Game Boy games were pick up and play for 5 minute games just by the very nature of the Game Boy.
Indeed, and God, you know, I've seen people even doing like Nintendo DS and some 3DS games on some of the folding phones that they've got out at the moment, which looks absolutely cool.
Gosh, it's so cool to think about what we could have had, but because Google went and charmed the pants off Nintendo, we've not. Dang it. Okay, let's move on and talk about, well, we're technically doubling back here. We're going to go back to Pokemon, because there's one other story in there that we didn't really mention before, and that is to do with Ed Sheeran, Anton.
Yeah, so, you know, love him or hate him, Ed Sheeran did a song for the most recent Pokemon Scarlet and Violet by the name of Terrestrial, and within moments of the official release of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, a mod was released for people with hat switches or using Yuzu to remove Ed Sheeran Celestial from the game. Oh dear.
Did it replace it with anything, or did it just strip out and replace it with silence?
I think they replaced it with a classic Pokemon song. It wasn't one that I was quite familiar with from having read up about it, but do give it a look if you're interested.
Fair enough. So if you have a strong dislike of Ed Sheeran, who, funnily enough, we were talking about in the Discord this week, he's a... One of our patrons is doing a dissertation, I think it is, on copyright infringement, and let's just say his name came up a lot.
Yeah, it's not a good week for Ed.
Not a good week for Ed. However, it is kind of a good week for the Wii U, because this week it turned 10, which is both sad and joyous. It had such a short life, really. It doesn't feel like it was only 10 years ago. It feels like much longer ago that the Wii U came out, because it was just a bit of a wet flop, frankly. That, yeah, I don't know whether to feel happy about this or sad about this, Anton.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to look back from, I think, especially in the context of the Nintendo Switch. I personally look back in the Wii U with a lot of fondness as a collector of the Wii U. I won't lie, this has been a little bit of a kick in the rear to get back to collecting and completing my 100% PAL set. One day soon, I'm working on it. But yeah, I think especially from an OS site and a Nintendo Online site, there's a lot that the Wii U did that the Switch has never caught up with. And I was kind of expecting over time the Nintendo Switch would fill in those gaps now that it's been 5 years on Nintendo Switch. And we're still not there. You know, stuff like web browsers, you know, kind of messaging other players and just the interactivity of the OS. You know, it was a remarkable piece of technology wrapped up in kind of cheap plastic. And home to so many great games that we take for granted on Nintendo Switch that found their home on Nintendo Wii U before making their way there. It's a lovely, lovely device, and I think a fun one to go back to.
It really is. I mean, that's pretty much it. Its virtual console was amazing. it would start on the Wii and then made its way to the Wii U. And by the time it got to the Wii U, that platform was... It doesn't have a parallel today. The Nintendo Switch Online stuff doesn't even come close to what they had. It's just... It was a groundbreaking bit of kit that did not get the love that it should have done. It had a 5-year lifespan because it was discontinued in January 2017, just before the Switch came out. So it was 5 years old. And to think what it managed to achieve in technically in the same time that we've now had the Switch for is remarkable, but equally really, really sad that it just didn't take off. It just wasn't a success, and I entirely blame Nintendo for their marketing of it, frankly. The quality was a bit meh, but really, they just marketed it so, so poorly.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. So as I mentioned, I'm a collector of Wii U's and, you know, I've got a large collection of it. And it's so often I mention people about the Wii U and they think it's still the gamepad. They don't realize it was an actual console. They still think it was an accessory for the Wii. They knew it did badly, but they thought it was a bad accessory and it was just a tough point for the Wii. And I think that's a testament to the awful marketing. A lot of it was quite tone deaf during this era. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the legacy of this device as it ages, because, you know, within of a bubble, it's, or within of a vacuum, it's a very, very fun console to go back to. And, you know, tons of fun stuff to be had there. It is, I think, the apex of dual screen gaming. You know, this was something that Nintendo experimented with from the Game & Watch through the DS, through the 3DS, and then into the Wii U. So they were very, very good at dual screen gaming. And this was a very mature kind of expression for them. And this is where it kind of ended. However, at the time, you know, it wasn't about what you had, it was what you didn't have with the Wii U. And, you know, if there was one feature I would love to see in a new Switch, it would be a wireless docking experience to a TV, and then through that enabling dual screen experiences. Because stuff like Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, having your inventory in the touchscreen while you had your gameplay on the top screen was brilliant.
It's funny, I feel I didn't give it enough of a go. So when I moved into my house, which I moved into in 2017, funnily enough, no, tell a lie, 2015, my neighbour next door had a Wii U, and we went next door for a social, and I was like, what's that? He's like, oh, it's a Wii U. I was like, what's a Wii U? I'd never heard of a Wii U. I'd heard of the Wii, I had never heard of the Wii U. I just didn't know the thing existed. And at that point, I was loving my video games. I was playing Xbox, I was playing Switch, not Switch, playing Xbox, playing PlayStation, had them both, had never heard of the Wii U. How, I have no idea, but I entirely blame Nintendo for that. I was oblivious, which is shocking. I then, on the back of it, went and bought one because I thought Mario Kart was just amazing. Mario Kart 8, and bought, I can't remember what other games, I bought about half a dozen games. They're all really, really good, but I only ever played it docked with the effectively Pro Controller, you know, the controller that came with it. And it was a really, really good controller. It was a bit plasticky-ish. It was a bit cheap, you know, that kind of a shiny plastic that it was made of. It wasn't the nicest controller in the world, but it felt really, really good. It's just, that was the way I played it. So I didn't get to benefit from this dual screen setup at all because I just didn't have any games that took advantage of it. The only one I did try that used that screen was Bayonetta, and I hated it because I, you know, all that super swipey to do moves. I was like, I can't remember these. I just want to press a button.
Yeah, there were some absolutely rubbish uses of the gamepad, of especially multiplats that didn't really want to take advantage of it. But there was, especially with the first part of Nintendo stuff, it just excelled. Nintendo Land was genius in kind of asymmetrical multiplayer games. There's ones where you're like Luigi within of a kind of a mansion on the gamepad. You know, ideally you would have to look away from the TV, and then everybody else on the TV is like split screen and they're the ghosts, so they can move around freely and they can see where they're each other, but the person who's Luigi, it, you know, cannot see that sort of stuff, which was just so cool.
Oh, that is awesome. So there you go, the Wii U, 10 years old this week. Let's talk about a game that we're never going to see, or at least we're not going to see anytime soon. It's a Japanese exclusive, and it's called Megaton Musashi X, which has been delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed a bit more and delayed a little bit more, but it's finally come out on the 8th of December. Should we care about this, Anton?
I think for most users, probably not. It's going to be a free-to-play mech combat game, and the combat style is reminiscent of the Dragon Ball Z games, if you've played any of those. Very over-the-top, very anime, very eccentric. I think the one thing this does have going for you is, as it is free-to-play, all you need to do is have a Japanese Nintendo account, and then you can download it on your console. You don't have to do any of the shenanigans of transferring over your money. How much mileage you'll get out of it once you've went through the rigmarole of getting a Japanese Nintendo account, I doubt to be too high. I'm not particularly taken by this one, and I'm kind of, I don't think we're going to be getting this one over here anytime soon.
In that case, let's not waste any more breath about it. And let's go talk about Fire Emblem Engage instead, because it has a new trailer, The Divine Dragon Awakens. Tell me about it.
Yeah, this was such a breath of fresh air to watch, especially after the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet really pushing Nintendo Switch to its limits and delivering what is looking like an uncompromised experience. What I found particularly notable of this game was getting to see Marth in the flesh. I believe we'd only seen Marth in a couple Twitter clips. And yeah, it's looking cinematic, epic, and multiversal. Although technically it's not a multiverse, but they've got people coming back from the past. It's looking very cool.
Who or what is a Marth? When you say Marth, I'm just thinking Snarf from the Thundercats or Narf from Pinky and the Brain. And I'm pretty sure you're not talking about either of them, given the fact we're talking about Fire Emblem, which is all about dragons and magic and people with big swords.
I am not indeed. Marth is, I believe, the former protagonist of one of the DS games or the 3DS games of Fire Emblem. So, to be honest, I know more so from Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
I have to say, though, I do agree. This game looks gorgeous. I'm not going to mince my words here. It looks absolutely stunningly beautiful. And it's so well done because it mixes, not photorealistic graphics, because that's not what they're going for, but really, really detailed sets with a sort of cartoon style of character, but it blends together so well. I am blown away by how good looking this game is. And when it eventually hits the Switch and we actually get to play it for real, I'm hoping it still looks as good as that, because I can't see why it wouldn't. This is just the way to do it right. Take note, Pokemon Company.
Indeed, this is clearly a team, you know, that's, you know, one, delivered three houses and then spent a couple years making a polished product, putting it out there. And yeah, it looks real, real good. I'm excited to kind of maybe actually delve in and give a Fire Emblem a go properly.
Indeed. You're going to have to do this next story yourself, Anton, because it's going to make me really, really, really angry. I've watched the trailer for it and I'm livid. So just you talk.
Indeed. So, Nintendo and LEGO have announced new expansion sets and character packs for LEGO Super Mario coming out in January 2023. They've got a trailer kind of summarizing this next, let's say, season of LEGO Mario. I feel like they probably should have gotten that out for December to get in the holiday season, but I'm sure there are kind of, you know, marketing teams know what they're doing. We've got a new character pack series 6. We've got kind of a Blobber expansion set, which is little fish people. Ice Mario, which I do like Ice Mario, he does look very cool. Boom-boom-tsh. And Frozen World expansion set. We've got Viper Snow Adventure set, Creative Toolmaker set, a Peach Garden and Balloon Ride, which will be a nice companion to the Peach Starter set, and the Lava Wave Ride, which is a bit out of place compared to all the snowy ones, but go off, I guess. My god, all of this is very expensive.
It is very expensive and very That was me inserting my own swear word beep there, because, you know, we're a family-friendly show. I mean, every time I see this LEGO stuff, I get really annoyed. The LEGO Bowser that they've released, which is eye-watering expensive, is about 230 quid. I've got my issues with that too. But at least it's proper LEGO, and it looks like Bowser, and it's amazing, and it's cool, and it's beautiful. Just very expensive. This stuff is rubbish, and the entire trailer, and I kid you not, the entire trailer is people picking up a character and booping it on top of a little RF chip and making its tummy change and make a noise. That is the whole trailer. Give us $60 or $50 and you too can lift up your character and go boop, diddy, ching. There is no play value in this. It's like they've taken Lego and gone, right, what do kids do? What do kids really like about Lego? Well, let's not do any of that, because that's just rubbish. Let's make these characters that don't look like Lego, look a bit like really bad Duplo characters, put some electronics in them, with a little chip, and then you can move them along and kind of do rubbish little moves in rubbish little sets that don't look anything like Mario. It's just... it's been a while since I've been this angry about the Lego Mario stuff, because it's been a while since it's released anything and I bothered watching a trailer about it. But I watched the trailer for this and it just got me livid. It's a minute and 13 seconds of anger. So much anger. And does this bug you as much as it bugs me, or am I alone in this?
Yeah, a little. You know, I think there's just so much cool stuff within of Nintendo worlds, and we just don't get to see very much of it in of this. You know, I thought this could have been real cool to, you know, when they did like Bowser's Castle, to actually have that maybe be like, you know, you could use it with the set and have Bowser, you know, have a Mario level inside of Bowser's Castle, and you can have this 40-pound, you know, Mario that can jump around this actual Lego set. But nah, the little pieces that you get to make these courses don't really make up anything. They don't have any aesthetic value in of themselves. I think they're not the most creative. I don't see them as the most stimulating for kids. And I just feel like it's, yeah, just a bit of a waste. And I'm surprised that we're still getting more of this stuff, because compared to most Lego, which holds its value exceptionally well, I feel like I always see these Lego starter kits on sale. It's not that hard to come by these on discount.
I know. I mean, when we did a recent roundup episode, as part of the roundup episodes that we do for the patrons, we have a what to watch this week section in there. And I think it was this week or last week, one of the things we highlighted was a video on YouTube of an amazing Lego creator out there who built this huge actual Mario level out of Lego. It was stunning. It had mechanical bits and moved in it, and it was all built with Lego. But that was what this should be. It was sort of it looked like screenshots. Remember in the good old days, I don't know if you remember these things, but back in the good old days when you used to buy a Nintendo magazine or a gaming magazine, they would somehow got screenshots of like whole scrolling levels and stuck them all together to make like this one big long picture that looked a bit like they'd taken film reels and laid them one below the other, and you could see the whole level laid out in front of you. That was basically what he created in Lego form, and it was just so good. That's what they should be doing with this. People would hand, I would be queuing up to hand my money over. Please let me buy your Lego Nintendo Mario stuff. I would be so happy. This stuff, I've ranted enough. Do you want to say anything else before we move on, Anton?
Nah, I think we should move on before we have to phone a hospital visit for yourself.
The vein is throbbing. You know, if you want to buy them, they're coming out in January. Go waste your money. Okay, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which, by the way, is looking pretty good too. It has a new trailer. We've got some technical details. And on the Switch, it is running at 1280 by 720. So that's 1080i, I think, off the top of my head. Is it? Yeah, by 720. Oh, it's 1080p, isn't it? At 30 frames per second.
I believe it's somewhere in the middle. It would be 1920 by 1080. 720p. This is looking like a true kind of miracle surprise port of the Nintendo Switch. It's looking exceptionally well. You know, I think they've understated this one a little, as it's not on the same tier of remaster as Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I understand they don't want to confuse it there, especially as there has been a couple iterations of Final Fantasy VII Remake and will continue to be, as they're kind of doing that game episodically. But this game looks miles and miles better than what they delivered on PlayStation Portable, and it's going to be a nice little treat for Nintendo Switch, which has missed out on some of the most recent big Final Fantasies in full effect. This is the most cinematic and, you know, modern incarnation of the franchise that we've seen on Nintendo Switch, and I'm delighted we've got it.
Yeah, it does look really, really good. I mean, don't get me wrong, if you're playing over the next gen consoles, the Xbox Series X or the PS5, you'll be getting it at 3840 by 2160 and at 60 frames per second. And if you play it on PC, you'll be getting it at 120 frames per second if your rig is up to it. But still, I am not complaining. That is a really good resolution for the Switch, and it just goes to show you yet again, if you put the care and attention in, you can do miracles with that now fairly aging hardware. This is a proper testament to what can be done if you put some effort and time and money into doing it well, Pokemon Company will look at you.
That's the anger. I love it.
It's been a while since I've had an angry episode, but this is very much an angry episode. The vein in the side of my head is definitely enlarged and throbbing more than it usually does. Okay, let's have some good Pokemon news. I quite like this one. Singapore this week has been having a bit of a Pokemon celebration, and as part of that, they did a really cool light show using drones in the sky and made some amazing sort of shapes. They made a Pikachu, they made a Pokeball, and all these different colored drones flying around, flashing lights, just making shapes of Pokemon in the sky. I would love to have been there to see that.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Almost utopian, dystopian, depending on how you think about it. But as a gamer, I do like seeing the spectacle of it. I think it's a slightly less intrusive way of doing sky celebrations than, let's say, having a, you know, Pokemon firework. And yeah, it's quite novel. It is a bit weird having, you know, branding in the sky, and hopefully that doesn't get abused in the years to come, but for the moment I will allow it.
I mean, it's only a matter of time. These drone swarms can do some really, really cool things, and this isn't the first time we've seen drone swarms doing advertising in the sky. It definitely won't be the last, but as drone swarm advertising goes, I quite like the fact that this is Pokemon. It has tied in with a huge big Pokemon celebration that's been going on in Singapore this week. They had a Pokemon dance party, they did a Pokemon Go Safari Zone where you could collect all the random Pokemon. What else did they do? They had a massive Pikachu drone show, which we've already talked about, and they did some picture spots in the gardens down in Marina Bay where you could wander around, and there was also some Pokemon graffiti, which... it just sounds like really good fun. I was in Singapore earlier this year. I wish I was there right now because I want to go see all that stuff. It sounds fun.
Very cool. Indeed.
There you go. Happy Al. He's back. Hooray. Let's move on and talk about some wrestling games, because weirdly, as much as I've never watched wrestling in my entire life, I do find wrestling games to be surprisingly good fun. And AEW Fight Forever is looking like it's shaping up to be another pretty decent entry in that range of wrestling games. And let's face it, they've got a new gameplay trailer, which has very much been bigging up their own game, Anton.
Indeed. You know, this is quite exciting to see, as the WWE games that we have gotten on Nintendo Switch have been just pitiful. This one actually looks like it's competently put together. THQ Nordic's kind of had to play their hand a little early, as it got leaked early, and they showed off a trailer maybe like 6 months ago now, and it was just actual wrestlers talking about how cool it would be to play a video game, and then the game off on a TV far away as they were playing the video game. This one has the video game, and I must say it looks leagues and leagues better than the last WWE game. And I think especially as the last couple WWE games have been quite sporadic in of their release, near anything here is going to be better than what we've had, and I think wrestling fans should rejoice. I imagine it's not quite the same as having a WWE game, but hopefully this will suffice.
Indeed. Let's give you a little flavour of how they tooted their own trumpet during this trailer. They had, quote, some various fairly big media organisations and outlets, and indeed GamesCon itself, just scattered throughout the trailer. They had Winner, Best Sports Game from GamesCon 2022. They had a quote from Famitsu saying that the game is created by a team that knows wrestling games inside and out. IGN said it's a throwback to what many view as the golden age of wrestling games. I mean, that is praise indeed, and rightly so, that they should be tooting their trumpets at this. And it just looks fun. It's tongue-in-cheek, wrestling fun at its best. Mash some buttons. And actually, there is one thing I did quite like about this. They very much play up on this is something you just pick up and play. You don't need complicated instructions or anything, just pick it up and play it. I love that, because it's something I remember as a kid. It's probably one of the reasons why I quite like wrestling games. I had one back in the NES, I think it was Tecmo World Wrestling, and you literally just picked it up and you pressed some buttons and your character did fun moves, and all these kind of sims get really, really complicated. You've got to know button combinations and timings, and just... it sucks the fun out of them to an extent. I hope that this is actually relatively simple and just stupid and fun.
And, you know, I kind of agree with you. You know, it's almost ironic that the wrestling games based on reality are, admittedly, it's a kind of a stage version of reality, are so much more pick up and play and friendly than the, you know, fighting games based on fictional Nintendo characters or kind of Looney Tunes characters and all that. It's bizarre.
It is very, very weird. So yeah, we've got that to look forward to. It's coming our direction at some point next year. We haven't got an actual release date for it yet. The last story before we go on to the rumours is that Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel has had an update, adding 3v3 or 5v5 gameplay modes. Anything you want to add to that story, Anton, or is that pretty much it in a nutshell?
Yeah, I think that summarises it well. I must say, as somebody who's played a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Tag Duel or Tag Force on the PSPs, the more players you have, you know, it's a turn-based game. So it's already pretty slow with, like, you know, doing a tag duel. Doing it 3v3 or 5v5, oh my god, that's going to slow down the game. That's a lot of waiting for your moment to pounce.
So you're not going to be playing 5v5
I think I'll pass, but I may have misinterpreted. Do let me know at NSUK or NSUKP podcast on Twitter. Do let us know if I have misinterpreted.
Very good. Let's talk about some rumours.
No, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
I lie. It's not rumours. It's a rumour. We got one, but it's a goodie. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom has been rated by the South Korean Rating and Administrations Committee. They've given it a 12, and it gives us a synopsis, which is an RPG game for the Nintendo Switch with the stage of adventure widening into the sky to find Zelda. That's intriguing and juicy.
Indeed. It's very exciting to get proof that this game is getting close to release. I think many of us still have, you know, fears of it getting delayed. I think rightfully learnt skills when it comes to Zelda games. And I won't lie, I wasn't 100% committed that it was actually coming out when they said it was. But with this bit of news in particular, this locks it down, because usually when we get games going for the age rating certification, they're usually coming out very, very soon. So this is very early. So this implies to me that the game's near enough done. And right now they're working on DLC, day one patches, and, you know, it's ready to go. And it's locked in for that release date. The synopsis, if true, or oversimplified, is a little bit disappointing. You know, when we saw the trailer and we saw Zelda and Link there, I was hoping that they would have kind of a little bit of equal play, maybe even have the choice of playing as either of them. But if it is a case that Zelda becomes a damsel in distress, a little disappointed there. I would have liked that character to have a little bit more agency. I understand having two playable characters is a little bit harder, but it doesn't feel outside the realm of possibility. Even if it was like you got to choose in which one you didn't play as became the one you had to go save, I would have really liked that, Al.
I don't think that you necessarily have to rule that out, to be honest, because we've got plenty of games where you jump between characters. There's nothing saying that you don't play as Link on the ground and head towards the sky, and you play as Zelda in the sky at the same time, leaping backwards and forwards. That's a mechanic that's well established in many, many games. Just, I mean, I'm thinking about GTA 5 where I just finished playing that. You can totally pull that off. There's nothing saying that Zelda games can't jump between characters. I think that this could still be on the cards. They pretty much said as much, and yeah, we've still got quite a while to wait. It's coming out on the 12th of May next year. But at least that's a concrete date. And as you say, it looks like this might be finished, polished, ready. It's off, being rated. It's got all this stuff. It's ready to go. Oh, sends shivers down my spine.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Because I even know then, although what we got was remarkably polished, I remember in the rumour mill in the lead up to Breath of the Wild, there was a little bit of, oh, they haven't started work on the dubbing process yet, and it's coming out in like a month. There was like a panic, but this one feels like it's locked, ready to roll, and hopefully Nintendo has a really killer marketing campaign to get this out to as many people as possible. Not that they really need it, because as time has shown us, I think everyone's very, very much hyped for this title.
Absolutely. And that's it. That is our one rumour. We are leaving on high, I think. It was very, very exciting. Should we mention how people can get in touch with us, Anton, before we disappear and sign off?
Indeed. If you want to get in touch, you can send us a little message on Twitter, Facebook, and email. On Twitter and Facebook, that is NSUK podcast. That also applies for YouTube. If you want to watch some of our reviews, and we did an interview a while back, do check out that space. If you want to learn more about everything we do, the best place to go is nsukpodcast.co.uk or nsuk.co.uk, getting forgetful. Got information there about the Patreon and all of our different shows and rewards, etc., etc. And yeah, that's all I've got to say today.
Fantastic. Well, let's not keep the good people waiting any longer. Good Lord, we've made it an hour, Anton. We were 59 minutes of a recording. That's quite impressive. I think it's more than enough of us. So I'm just going to say cheerio.
Au revoir.